What we're talking about is late night early morning low clouds. With a chance of fall, chance of showers into the afternoon, with variable high cloudiness and gusty winds. Gusty winds at times around the corner of Sunset and Alvarado. Yeah, I know, things are tough all over. When the thunderstorms start increasing over the southeast and south central portions of my apartment, I get upset. And a line of thunderstorms was developing in the early morning hours ahead of a slow-moving cold front. Cold-blooded. With tornado watches issued shortly before noon Sunday for the areas including the western region of my mental health and the northern portion of my ability to deal rationally with my disconcerting, precarious emotional situation. Cold out there. Colder than a ticket taker's smile at the Ivor Theater on Saturday night. Flash flood watches cover the southern portion of my disposition.
Yeah.
There was no severe weather well into the afternoon, except for kind of a low and gust wind in the bedroom.
And, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome, welcome to the French Connection, Tuesday edition, 31st of January. Almost starting the next month, and, you know, things are, lots of predictions out there. I don't know what you've been hearing, but I hear predictions all the time, and I don't know if they're right or wrong. I made a few myself. You know, it's, lots of stuff happening anyway. We're going to talk about some of those things in a moment, but let me tell you who I am. I'm Daryl Bradford Smith, and I'm coming to you live and direct from central France. It's 8 minutes after 10 o'clock at night here where I am, and getting cold again. We had a reprieve for 2 days, and it's right back into winter, ladies and gentlemen. But that's the way it should be. I mean, I grew up in the Northeast, and, geez, winter is supposed to be cold. I don't know if we have as much cold weather as we used to, but it's supposed to be cold. Anyway, a lot of people have been talking about the Super Bowl being a target for a American-sponsored, American government-sponsored, not American public, American government-sponsored terror attack on the event. And it wouldn't be beyond these people to do something that heinous, considering they were the murderers of 100 million people last century. The same people behind our government did that. So for me to think that they would detonate a device or kill people in wholesale at a sporting event, to me it would not be surprising, especially since their goal is to implode the United States. They're well on their way. If you take a look at the largest businesses in America, most of them have closed down all of their production plants over the last 15 years. They have moved their businesses outside the country, including now General Motors and Ford. Even Boeing now is moving their machinists and their equipment and their things piece by piece out of the country. There'll be virtually nothing left in America soon. We do have a few things we still produce, but that's mostly cottage industries and services. But new statistic just came out that we have a negative savings rate. Now, what does that mean, ladies and gentlemen? That means on a monthly basis, people don't put a savings account, any money in a savings account. They actually are borrowing, net borrowers in the entire country. So if you took every single person in their aggregate, we would be in negative numbers for the first time since 1933. Now, what does that say to you, 1933? Well, that was really the full beginning of the Depression. We had a back-and-forth situation from 1929's crash. In fact, just after 29, the stock market actually climbed for a period. and then fell again, inclined a little bit and fell again. It wasn't linear, as some people believe. You know, history reports it linear, a linear crash. But the real suffering began in 33. Why? Well, that's because people began to run out of what they had saved. People began to run short on the things that they kept in reserve, and they went through any extra things that they might have been able to buy things with, and the real poverty of the Depression began to sink in by 33. And in fact, that was the year that the American government went to the international bankers and claimed bankruptcy as a nation and borrowed money against future production and future value. That was really the precursor to what we're sitting through now. They've been waiting for their repayment, ladies and gentlemen. And who is the they I'm talking about? Well, they are the political arm of a Jewish conspiracy, but not all Jews, and I must qualify that clearly, evil Jewish leadership. Many of the people living throughout America in the Jewish community are as clueless about these people as most Americans are, and in no way support these kinds of things. If they wanted to be Israelis, ladies and gentlemen, not Americans, most of them would have moved to Israel, but that has not been the case, neither in America nor in France. Why? Because nobody really wants to go there. What they're trying to do with this country imploding here is not the providence of all the Jews in the country, but rather a very powerful, very wealthy, very, very organized group of elites who are designing a takeover of the world. That sounds crazy, but it's not. This is what's been so difficult for most people to wrap their brain around. But let's go through some of the facts again. You know, who's running the government? We've got rabbis. There have been three of them in George Bush's administration, possibly four rabbis in the administration. We have had our Homeland Security's run by a Jewish man named Chertoff, and he is a dual citizen of Israel. Yevgeny Primakov, also a man named Pincus, his name is. His name isn't Primakov, it's Pincus, and he's Jewish as well. Came over, he was a KGB chief in Russia, and he's over in America now designing our Homeland Security, internal security program, along with a man named Marcus Wolf, who was a Stasi specialist on snitches. He's been working under contract with Homeland Security as well. These two are both Jewish, and they are both from the Zionist group of evil megalomaniacs. Not the upper crust here, ladies and gentlemen. The upper crust are the money people. They are even Greenspan, being Jewish and working for these people, he's not the leader. He is one of the henchmen. We can talk about Mr. Rothschild, Mr. Warburg, Mr. Goldman at Goldman Sachs. We can talk about Mr. Brofman in Canada. We can talk about Mr. Newhouse. We can talk about all of these different people. How about Mort Zuckerman? How about, you know, there are a lot of them over here in France as well, in the media and in business. The chief executive of Renault. There you go. Mr. Spitzer. We could talk about all of these folks are running our world into the ground with a goal in mind. And there it is. And when we come back, talk a little bit about Ray McGovern's coming on the show and some of the things we're going to discuss with Ray. Stick with me.
Scotch and soda. But in your eyes. Baby, do I feel hot?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're back again, and it's a great day to be alive. Every day is. It's, in fact, you know, where there's life, there's hope, ladies and gentlemen, and that is what I am telling you today. We have life, we have hope. I'm hoping, against hope, that more people will be brought to this message. I have asked all of my listeners to try and bring as many people to this broadcast as possible. We're not looking for the run-of-the-mill listener here. We want people who have gravitas and capacity and education and are able to influence others. These are the kinds of people I'd like to begin to help understand the facts around what's happening so that they can go out and share this knowledge with others as a force of teaching, a teaching force across the country about just how this was done to us, the effects of it all, and what it is we need to start doing to counteract what they've done. First of all, we've got to stop going to places that are lying to us. And as long as we go to those places, we're going to be getting the wrong information. Or, you know, a lie is not necessarily something that someone tells you that's false. A lie can be something that is omitted intentionally. Now, of course, when you lie through omission, you tend to have people follow you longer because it sounds like much of what you're saying is true. But the most important elements of what you've needed to say were left out. Now, this has been the problem I've had with many of these so-called truth movement websites. And it is my demand that these people clean up their act that has kept me isolated from other websites. But I don't necessarily want to be part of a mainstream click on me and find information from other people's sites. I don't want to be associated with the people who are telling you it's George Bush that's done all this to us. I don't want to be part of their truth, because their truth is a lie by omission, ladies and gentlemen. And if you don't understand that, then you don't understand anything. And I'm assuming my audience being very well educated and being better than the rest. And I say that with pride, that you know the difference. And that's why when we talk about these things, and we talked about how there's two sides to this battle at the top. They've got a political arm and a religious arm that are setting the agenda for the activities in the Middle East. You know, we've got a group of rabbinical scholared rabbis practicing Kabbalah in a very aggressive and what we have come to know as a dictatorial and murderous way. But you need not look any further than the history of these groups to find out that murder, mayhem, and destruction are what they do best. Take a look at World War I. Listen to Benjamin Friedman. Please listen to Mr. Friedman. He will explain to you in detail how these folks operate. Listen to Mr. Untermyer returning from Germany and discussing how he is going to bring the German people to their knees. Now, Mr. Untermyer's German Jews that were there had never been treated better in any country they'd ever lived in until these people decided to turn on them. Now, it was explained yesterday that was because none of them wanted to go to this little crap hole in the middle of the desert to live. There was nothing there, no sophisticated cities, no lush greenery. It was a burned out, beat up desert, backwards and just afoul of any graces. And these people said, no, we don't want to go there. They continue to say no, ladies and gentlemen, today, through to today. The same goal is being put in place in the United States to get the American Jewish community to immigrate to the Middle East, so that their plan, as has been announced on their websites, they have announced these plans to begin to bring back this messianic era. They want to bring their Messiah, whom, according to these rabbinical scholars, is alive on the earth now. They're waiting to introduce him to us all. Us Gentiles, or Esau's, as many will call us, or us Goyim, will understand this person to be the Antichrist. For believing and devout Jews, they will find him to be the jealous God always spoken about. And he is supposed to reestablish himself in the Temple Mount. And this is what these people are planning for us now. If you read the Zohar and the Talmud and some of these documents that have circulated, our fate has been sealed if they win. We are not supposed to survive their arrangements once they've put everything in place. You think this is nonsense? Well, this is coming from a guy who is not religious, ladies and gentlemen, but I looked into the facts. I looked into what these people believe. It doesn't matter what I believe. It matters what somebody with access to $200 trillion and an incredible criminal network around the world is able to do to the rest of the world. It is immaterial what I think is real and what isn't. What is material to this whole discussion is that they believe it and that they're working in this direction. And if you take a look around America to our media and our government and who's paying off our politicians, 102 visits from congressmen to Israel last year, 102 separate representatives. Now, I wonder if 102 representatives visited Delaware or Massachusetts or New Hampshire or Maine or Hawaii or Washington State or even New York. I wonder. I'll bet you know. And you know what we found out, ladies and gentlemen, is they use things like child sex slavery to entice these people from a very early point in their careers. And the people who have been compromised get financial support for their elections. And of course, once they make it up into their higher offices, the financial support continues and the demands on them continue. They have bought and paid for our entire government. And now, you take a look at our administration, and 60% of the leadership in this White House is from this community, including three rabbis. I couldn't make this up. I wouldn't write it this way. I couldn't make it up. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have Ray McGovern on. He's been on with me many times. He's a friend. We're gonna pull on his coat for a while and see what we can get him to admit when we return. And ladies and gentlemen, great to be back with you, Daryl Bradford Smith, French Connection. We've got about an hour of talk radio coming up with my guest. His name is Ray McGovern. You already know, most of you, who Ray is. He has spent most of his life as a professional analyst within the CIA. He's been a briefer of presidents and somebody who, over the last few years, has seen some terrible indications, probably more than just a few years, and came to an awakening that we were heading to a destruction here, and he began speaking out some time ago, and he's a part of an organization that is trying very desperately to share the truth with as many people as he can. Ray, I want to go to you right now. You know, welcome first of all.
Thanks, Daryl. Glad to be back.
Well, it's nice to have you back. You know, each time you've come, you've brought with you a little more knowledge because of, as we are all growing in these terrible events, we're all starting to understand the depth of it all. And I want to ask you a question about the slide of the country here. I remember when I was a young man, we didn't have pornography. It wasn't existent. When I was 1960s, we didn't have it. We didn't have this kind of sick promotion of sickness on our airwaves, where they have talking about death all the time and gold plated teeth to young men with no educations being role models, and women that look like prostitutes as young girl models and all this. I've watched a moral slide in our nation over my lifetime that I could not have predicted as a young child or as a young man. But I believe, Ray, today that it was by design, and it's painful to see it all culminating now in almost a textbook case of an implosion in my view. And it's just not the finances. It's just not our soft power in the world. It's the whole pack. What do you have to think about that?
Well, Daryl, I've been watching things in Washington here very closely for over 40 years now, and I too have witnessed the kind of a moral slide. What most concerns me is the unprecedented greed and the unprecedented violence that goes with that greed, and the unprecedented deception and lies. And so what we have here is a situation where our very democracy is hanging in the balance, particularly when you have a president who told us at the end of the year that, I violated the FISA law. I approved these illegal, he didn't say illegal, I approved these eavesdropping wiretaps or eavesdropping on everything from emails to intercontinental telephone calls and so forth. And I did it 30 times, and I'm going to keep doing it. And what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And that is, not even Richard Nixon admitted to an impeachable offense, but that is clearly an impeachable offense if not only he admits to circumventing the laws on the books, namely the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, passed in 1978, with a twin purpose, by the way, the first to prevent intrusions into or violations of the Fourth Amendment, our right to privacy, but equally important in those days was to assure that the president had the latitude, had the flexibility to conduct wiretaps and other kinds of electronic surveillance. And they made it flexible enough so he could do that and not even go to a judge for 72 full hours.
Yep.
And if he wanted to continue, all they had to do was send some paperwork to the judge, who was really a rubber stamp. So to see the president circumvent that and then brag about it and say this is necessary to protect your security, and to have most people say, well, we need our security, that's a very dangerous thing. And when we have people kind of brainwashed, maybe that's the right term here.
It is the right term, Ray, and that's at a minimum, my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the so-called mainstream press,
yeah.
Then you have a real problem. And as much faith as I have in the basic goodness and the basic perspicacity of the American people, I'm afraid that we're faced with a new situation now because of the terrible state of our education, frankly, and unbiased, the incredibly biased state of our media. So, number one, if people really haven't been taught to think for themselves and had enough history to understand what the balance of power in the Constitution is, and number two, if they're told by Fox News, Fox Channel News, that everything's okay and besides the president is just protecting you from Al-Qaeda, then I really fear for the future of our country.
Well, I mirror that, but I think it's even more dire than that. I mean, I'll give you a little statistic. We were first or second in education back in 1953, probably when you were just coming up in the world there and probably in school at the time. The facts are we're now 27th in the world, and there are actually several third world countries that are beating us in education.
Mm-hmm.
The facts are also that we spend more per capita on education than any country in the world. So what we're doing is we're spending it on nonsense. And, look, Ray, I got to tell you, I think, and from what I can see here, there are no checks and balances. You and I both know the election, both in 2000 and 2004, were full of shenanigans. How much of it was stolen and how much of it was intimidated into his favor is up for question, but the fact is nothing was legit about that. But the fact is the person he had running against him was a dupe as well. He was a plant. I've been able to realize that there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats or the Republicans, and you can see that based upon how they have not done their job or their traditional role of checking this man's activities. They've been bought and paid for.
Yeah, they've been very cowardly, that's for sure. One always asks me, you know, when the Bush administration deliberately falsified intelligence so that they could go to the Congress and say, look, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, and there's a grave and gathering threat coming, and so you must vote with us for war. People ask me, well, were the Democratic representatives and senators really duped by that?
No.
Or did they sort of go along because Karl Rove very carefully planned this whole thing to coincide with the month before the midterm elections?
Well, actually, he planned the attack on Purim. Purim is the Jewish holiday that is coincided with attacks on enemies from Israel. So that would probably won't surprise you either. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, I got a few more pointed questions for my guest, Ray McGovern, and more from the French Connection. Stick with me. And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We're back. We got a nice long segment coming up here with my guest, Ray McGovern. Ray, I want to go right back to you on this. You know, I did a bunch of research on this. Early on, I wasn't aware of much of what I know today. And I kept going down this same path and finding the same names, same faces. And my research kept turning up the same stuff every time. And when I started saying to myself, wait a minute now, I always sensed this from my youth till now, that these people that I've come to find out are involved in this were involved. And it happened to be not just Israel, but a group of very powerful and very wealthy worldwide people who from the Jewish faith who are involved in a lot of the things that we're fighting against, including in our media, in our banking, in our financing, and in the terrible things happening in Israel. And I have many Jewish friends who have nothing to do with this, Ray, and I'm very aware of that, you know. In fact, on this show, I work with some rabbis trying to make sure that this is a balanced examination. But at the same time, when you start coming back to the same stuff all the time, you have to start calling them like you see them. And it's, of course, you know this is a dangerous road to go down, and you have to be brave because they're going to throw everything but the kitchen sink at you. But I got to tell them, I got to tell the public what I found. And I'm wondering how you've sussed this out.
Well, Darrell, you know, I come out of an environment where intelligence was designed to speak truth to power and to everyone else who wanted to listen, to tell it like it is. And it was a very privileged position because not only were we enjoined to do that, but we had career protection for doing that. And if we did it well, under the ethical directors under which I worked for the most part, then we got promoted for telling the truth, even though the Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense might be in high dudgeon about what we said to the President. So that's kind of a given. It was a privilege, never have to worry about campaign donations or what people thought or, being called this or that name. And so when I was, for example, asked to testify before the Conyers Committee back in June of last year,
yeah,
and they asked me what the main, you know, it was sort of confusing because the point of the committee hearing had to do with the Downing Street memos, which showed that the administration had deliberately manufactured, as the British would put it, fixed intelligence to suit the policy of war well before there was any intelligence, real or imagined, to justify war.
Mm-hmm.
So after dismissing weapons of mass destruction as being non-existent, and ties between Iraq and al-Qaeda as being similarly non-existent, one of the congressmen turned to us, we panelists, and said, gosh, well, if it wasn't weapons of mass destruction, it wasn't ties between Iraq and al-Qaeda, you know, if it wasn't that Iraq was going to give its non-existent weapons of mass destruction to al-Qaeda, which it hated, then what was it all about? And I could see that my colleagues weren't real enthusiastic about answering that question, so I simply said what I've been saying for the prior 2 years. I used the acronym OIL. You know, everybody laughed, OIL. I said, well, it's not, no, it really is an acronym. O for oil, I for Israel, and L for the logistical base, namely the permanent military bases that the neocons who are running this policy consider necessary to put us in a position where we can make that region entirely safe for Israel and put that region under our influence with respect to the oil and with respect to the gas and the water rights and everything else that is so critically important in that area.
Yeah.
And the L, of course, was for this logistical thing, which I
just mentioned. Logistics is so they can launch the next little strike they need in Iran.
Yeah, or, you know, wherever, Syria.
Oh, wherever, yeah.
So I took it on the chin for, well, you know, when I looked up, I saw people kind of tightening up. And then I said, well, you know, I realized that that it's not permitted in civil discourse here in this country to mention Israel in this connection. But this whole hearing is about whether intelligence was massaged or politicized. And I find it highly ironic that anyone should expect me to convert my testimony from OIL to simply OL because it might offend some people.
Can we go further with this now? Because I've discovered that it goes deeper than that. And you use the term neocons. I use the term Zionists.
Yeah.
Why do I do that? Because the people in charge of this White House from top to bottom, left to right, and front to center are working on a single goal on behalf of Israel. And they're doing it in a long-term plan, Ray, that has dated back for generations even. And I got to tell you, my history is complete. I've looked into the origins of World War I under these people. If you listen to Benjamin Friedman, you'll understand that Ben Friedman took part in the Balfour signing, and he put pressure on the British government on the behest of 120 wealthy Jews from America and Europe. And then we, in turn, starved the German people into under a boycott instituted by the same group. So I'm wondering, Ray, you know, we know that this particular group is in charge of our country right now. What are we going to do about it? And when we come back, I hope maybe you can maybe go a little further than we have been going and maybe do a little history lesson with us here. My friend Ray McGovern will be right back with me, ladies and gentlemen, on The French Connection. Stick with us. Gentlemen, we're back. Daryl Bradford Smith with you today. French Connection. Ray, I'm going to ask you to speak truth to power again here, and I want you to know that I make caveat announcements that I am in alliance with the Jewish community who hasn't participated in this stuff, and that's the majority, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. And so make no mistake, this is not a condemnation of Jews. This is a condemnation of a criminal element within their community that is that I believe is enslaving our planet. And I think their goal is to destroy the Christian values that we all have grown up with and formed our nation under. And Ray, do you have a take on what I just presented?
Yeah, Daryl, I wouldn't put it in precisely those terms. I think it's a matter of power politics and power craze gone amok. Let me start by saying this, that when I mentioned before Congress that I resented, that I really thought completely inappropriate the president's continued references to Israel as our ally, I got roundly criticized for that and then called anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Now, this is a matter of fact. I mean,
that's a badge of honor I wear, by the way.
Well, everyone's entitled to their own opinions, but not everyone's entitled to their own facts. And the fact is that Israel is not our ally. And so I've been thinking a lot about that and why it is that the president and the vice president continue to refer to Israel as our ally when no alliance approved by the Senate exists. And I've been looking back in history here and consulting people who know a lot more about this than I do, and I found some very interesting things. My question was, well, why is there no alliance? You know, if we're as close to Israel as we have been, why has no one suggested that we conclude a treaty of alliance with Israel? Certainly our Congress, given its coloration and its full support for Israel, would certainly approve that. Where's the fly in the ointment? You know what I found out?
What did you find out?
Israel doesn't want it.
Well, right? Yeah, of course not,
why?
Because they're going to turn us into their enemy.
Well, no, I think the reason is, and this goes back in history, to have an alliance, to have a treaty of a mutual defense pact, they would have to define their borders, number one, something they've always been reluctant to do. They would be afraid that this alliance would inhibit their freedom of action in some ways, and that certainly would be possible. And they would be afraid that there would be constraints on their use of the incredible weaponry that we put at their disposal. In other words, Israel very confident that they can get what they want from this country without an alliance. Why run the risk of tying their hands in any way and having Congress able to look over their shoulders and say, well, you know, if you're our ally, please don't, send your tanks into the West Bank or so forth. So the simple answer that I'm getting from friends who have looked into this and worked in these areas for decades is that there's no alliance because Israel doesn't want one.
Well, let me tell you further, though. Do you know how many ministers are in the Bush administration?
Ministers, you mean like...
Reverends.
Reverends. Well, I imagine more than a handful.
None.
Oh.
None in his upper level, none.
Oh, okay.
How many Catholic priests?
Gosh,
none
that I know of.
None. How many rabbis?
Gosh, I haven't counted them.
How about four?
Four?
Yeah.
Now, who are they?
Well, I can give you one of them. Ari Fleischer just left. There's another one that...